Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Okay, welcome to the show. Others receiving votes. I'm Pat 40 with Gene Wojciechowski and Brian Fisher as always. And gentlemen, the old saying is, may you live in interesting times. That was once misattributed as a Chinese curse. I found out that's incorrect. Not sure where it comes from, but these are incredibly interesting times in college football. They are unprecedented times. As of today, as of now, we have Vanderbilt in the top 25. We have Indiana in the top 25. We have Illinois in the top 25, and we have Texas Tech in the top 25. The last time those happened at the same time, you ask? Never. This is the first time in college football history that those four perennial punching bags are all ranked and all playing well, undefeated, and heading into big games for three of the four this weekend. Vanderbilt should have a walkover against Georgia State, although they thought that last year too. I just want to talk a little bit about this as we get ready for Texas Tech at Utah, two ranked teams, and Illinois at Indiana, who last played as ranked opponents in 1950. Gene was there.
Gene, that's funny.
Yeah, you were wearing the coonskin cap and waving the pennant in the stands, I think, right? Anyway, so we have these games with these teams. We are coming off a year in which Indiana and SMU made a 12-team playoff. My question for you, is this what the NIL/portal era is or can be, will be? Is it where we're going to have teams rising up, coming out of nowhere, inserting themselves into the equation? Or is this a blip? Is this something that is maybe just a coincidence? We have too small a sample size to know for sure. Interested in your thoughts on this. Gino, what do you got?
Yes to all those things. For some of those schools, it might be a blip. For others, it's a template that they can use and be successful with year after year. For others, it's a matter of hiring the right people to find the right players at the right price point. You have to get lucky. You have to be smart. But if I'm a mid-major program, if I'm a program at the edge of relevancy, I'm definitely looking at what Vandy has done, what IU has done, what U of I has done, what Texas Tech has done, which is basically just money whip everybody. That's not a formula that every program is going to be able to do. But the point is that these are all new approaches that have been taken. And if you're one of those programs trying to become relevant, you owe it to yourself to at least look and examine how they've done it. But one thing to keep in mind, fellas, is the big boys aren't going away either. What Texas is spending, Oregon, Georgia, Auburn, Tennessee, Ohio State, A&M, I can go down the list. They're not going away. So if you think that programs like Indiana are suddenly going to take over college football just because they've sort of figured out the portal and NIL and that sort of thing, that's not going to happen as long as Ohio State and Oregon and those others are all spending the kind of money that they're spending.
Well, it also helps outside of Illinois going to play at Duke to not play anybody early in the year, too. I think that's another common theme amongst those teams you just mentioned, Pat. But, you know, there's no question in my mind that the talent has been spread out in this kind of new NIL era. And really, since that one-time transfer portal rule kind of went into effect, guys do not want to sit and play anymore. And nowadays, schools don't want to pay them to sit and play either, or sit and not play. You know, you look at the top 50 players in the class of 20, 2025. Where are they going? There's guys going to Colorado and Georgia Tech and Missouri, Kansas State, Iowa, Ole Miss, Tennessee. Like, this is not your typical top 50 anymore, where there's 20 guys going to Georgia and Ohio State. The talent is spreading out, and I think we're seeing that on Saturdays. Even in the transfer portal rankings, you got Texas Tech in there, you got Mizzou in there, you got North Carolina, Kentucky, some of these other schools that want some of these quick fixes. They're able to turn things around, pretty quickly. And so that depth that you used to have at some of those blue bloods, yes, they're paying for it in terms of those star players, but the depth is no longer there. And I think that is showing up in a lot of these games on Saturdays that are coming down to, some close games in the fourth quarter. Backup quarterbacks, nobody has one anymore. I think that's something that we're going to see later on in the year, is when some of those starters goes down, it is going to have a bigger impact on the college football playoff race, on the college football in general, in terms of that talent being spread out a little bit more than it has been these last couple of years.
Yeah, I think you guys I largely agree with both of you. The Cassandra cry when we hit this era, especially NIL, is just the rich are just going to get richer. But there's a cap on how rich they can get in terms of exactly what you're saying, Brian, is that you can't play them all. You can't sign them all, and you can't play them all. And so if you've got guys who are good enough to get on the field somewhere else, they're probably going to do it. There's a certain percentage of players, I'm sure, who would take more money and not play and be a backup at some of the places that truly have the mountains of cash, that have the money cannons to shoot like Texas Tech does. But most of the guys are going to say, hey, if you give me $200,000 and you put me in the starting lineup, I'll go. If the alternative is to make $300,000 and not play perhaps somewhere else. So I think that's part of what we're seeing. I do think, Gene, to your point, that you've got some pretty savvy coaches / general managers, whoever's making the calls on rosters in terms of finding guys who can play and plugging them in and having success. I mean, Indiana is just a abundantly clear example of that, with these guys that came from James Madison, and they had a quarterback from the MAC, and what they did last year with those guys. And you look at how Virginia Tech and Virginia are right now and say, why didn't you recruit all those guys that were from the state of Virginia who were killing it at James Madison and are now in the playoff at Indiana? And so that's talent identification, that's player development, and then that's the ability to pay them. And I think one thing that we see that's kind of part and parcel of this is everybody's got at least some money, and how you allocate it and who you're going to pay. Boise's got four dealerships. And certainly, SMU has plenty of boosters, but Indiana has football boosters. Indiana has Big Ten revenue. Texas Tech has plenty of oil, fossil fuel money. And you've got enough people that you can make some allocation of funds and say, this is where we're going to invest. And some people get it right. Some people get it wrong. Gene, to your point, yes, the Cassandra cry was, the rich are going to get richer. No, the rich are going to stay rich.
Exactly.
Which is what you're saying.
There you go. Yes.
Georgia and Alabama and Oregon and Ohio State aren't going away. But can they be challenged, and can there be new faces rotating in and out, cycling through? Yeah. So I think that's good for the sport. It's good for fan interest. Again, I am not a fan of being able to transfer every single year and suit up for a different team, but portal fluidity and the ability to get some NIL money has helped just kind of widen, I think, the pool or the opportunities for players out there.
Well, and one other thing, Pat, this is to Brian's point, I think it's really accentuated how thin the margins are now between making a great decision and a disastrous decision. And when Brian talks about how maybe we don't have the depth that we used to have, I would point everyone to Ole Miss and their backup quarterback situation, and how they sought out this kid from Ferris State and they signed him and they had scouted him and they spent the money wisely. And look at what he's done when they needed him. And if you don't make those kind of smart decisions, you're going to get screwed when it comes crunch time, when there's an injury, when you have a lack of depth. And so I think Ole Miss is a great example of a program that went out and used its money wisely. If you just throw money, aim money at the problem, that doesn't guarantee you success anymore.
No doubt about it. You know, and you look at Florida State, which just blew it. They went invested their money in all the wrong people last year. Now they got smarter. So it's got smarter and invested better this year. They also changed their coaching staff. But, you know, that's one of those where, yes, we just say, oh, we're just going to go get 8 highly rated guys out of the portal. Well, what if they're highly rated but not actually any good?
Yeah,
or they don't fit into what you're trying to do. So no doubt about it. And also give credit to Lane Kiffin for Austin Simmons. You know, they lost Jackson Dart. He's probably going to be an NFL starter this season. And it's like, okay, we're going to Austin Simmons. He's brand new. We're throwing him in here, but we better have a backup plan.
Right.
They did, so. All right. Speaking of these fresh faces on the block, I went down on Tuesday, drove 65 south to Vanderbilt. Story will be up at SI.com Thursday. And we're going to get a little sports writer geeky here, a little inside the how the sausage is made, or at least how you feel while the sausage is being made. And this was one of those things. You know, so we've all been where we go to do these stories, right? And you kind of come parachute in, and usually it's pretty easy when a team's 3-0 and they've got, you know, it's Vanderbilt and they haven't won. But in football especially, usually, you know, you come in maybe with a list. I would like to talk to these 5 people. And more these days, it's like, let's see, player A, no, not available. Player B, you know, we're kind of keeping him away from the media for now. Coach C, not really doing interviews right now. Coach D would like to talk to you about your idea and see really where you want to go with this. You know, they're a lot of gatekeeping, a lot of paranoia controlling, maybe. You go to Vanderbilt? Come on in, man. Who do you want to talk to? Here's the whole list. Yes, 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 and yes. I mean, it's just beautiful. I wanted to hug everybody when I'm walking out. Say thank you very much for not only being available, but being incredibly honest. So the premise of the story here is that you know, we know the Vanderbilt story in general, but the part that really I was interested in is Jerry Kill, who is on the staff there. He's the former head coach at Southern Illinois, Northern Illinois, Minnesota, and eventually New Mexico State. And Kill has always done really well in hard jobs. He had to leave the Minnesota job. He's epileptic. He was having seizures. They kept getting worse. He was having them during games. He wasn't able to control it. He had to step down. It's pretty sad. And you talk to him, and he said, I'm still not over Minnesota, frankly. But he shows up at New Mexico State, which is the worst job in America. And has been. In Sports Illustrated in 1992 wrote about it being the worst football program in America. And that was in 92. It was still true in 2022 when he arrived. They somehow won 7 games the first year. They somehow won 10 the second year. And they found this kid, Diego Pavia, the quarterback. And he and Kill developed this relationship that's like father-son, even though they don't have a ton in common, other than they're both hard asses who have scrambled their way through life. And to be able to go down and talk to them and find out about what makes them click, and to see this group go from Las Cruces to the west end of Nashville in Vanderbilt, in this Tony neighborhood, in this glittery city, and take over, just like, hey, the rough and tumble boys are here. Guess what? We're going to get good. It's a fantastic story. So I know you guys could appreciate just the sheer joy that you get when you actually go to interview people and they want to talk to you and they tell the truth. And then you walk out and you're driving home like, oh my gosh, I love this job. Anyway, I am very intrigued by Vanderbilt and watching them, and I think it's the best story in college football. But there are plenty of other good storylines, so I would like to get your input on what you think the best stories out there are right now.
Well, you know, listen, I want to peel back the curtain on some sports writing too as well. You know, I know fans think that we hate your team and we have some sort of vendetta against your team every single week, but there are only a few things that we kind of as sports writers like. Number one, we want Hawaii to be undefeated so we can extend a trip out to the islands come, you know, fall or winter. You know, I think that's number one on our bucket list. Number two, we want the best quote or the best story to, you know, survive or happen or transpire so that we can write about it. So let's just kind of speak it into existence, that quote machine, Mr. Billable Hours himself, Diego Pavia. Let's just speak Vanderbilt to the college football playoff and just kind of throw that out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let's
marinate. I mean,
he can talk.
This is the first time those Doors have won their first three games by 20 plus points since 1930. You know, like this is a very interesting moment. And I think it's going to be fascinating, not just to kind of follow this story along. I mean, look, they should be 5-0 going to that Alabama game. And we know they have some history there with the Tide. You know, they got LSU and Missouri at home. Like there's a schedule that does kind of set up well. I mean, you wouldn't make them more than a touchdown, you know, underdog at all against an Auburn, a Tennessee. Certainly they're going to be favored against Kentucky. Like this is not some flash in the pan. And I think it's fascinating to see not just for Vanderbilt, what it's done to that program, but what it's done for the SEC and what it's done for, you know, college football in general, to have these type of underdog stories that you can root for. I mean, they were probably maybe the stars of the show of that Netflix documentary a couple of months ago. So I think it's fascinating. I'm very curious to see who can kind of coast off this and also have these type of, similar type of seasons. I mean, you could probably throw anybody out there in the Big 12 that could have some sort of similar coming from nowhere type of stories. You know, you got Georgia Tech this year that's in kind of a similar vein with another hard-nosed quarterback in Haynes King. I know, Pat, you wrote about the 6 degrees of Jimbo Fisher and all the success. Well, they've got one of those guys that used to be an A&M quarterback in Eli Stowers. So, I think it's a fascinating story in college football, but also good for the game to show that, hey, here's proof positive. If you work, if you're a hard-nosed team, if you put those resources in to the season itself, you can have success. And I think we're seeing that there in Nashville with Vandy.
I would throw Cal out there as another program that is fun to root for right now. And, Pat, you'll do anything to get that mileage money, won't you? You want that 60 cents per mile, and you will – I'm driving wherever I need to drive.
I'm going to retire on that for sure.
Get the per diem.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's part of the sports writer's Bible. The thing about Vandy is, first of all, you have a personality that is, he's great on every level. You know, Pavia is just great on every level. It's like Baker Mayfield, a smaller version of Baker Mayfield being parachuted into Nashville. It's like Rice suddenly being a CFP quality team. It's the Browns, it's the Jets being relevant. I mean, that's what's happening at Vandy. For years, decades, we thought of Vandy as the football program that provided absolutely nothing to the SEC. It got the checks, it cashed them. We don't know what they did with it. They had this quirky setup in their athletic department. Yep. The football program that just didn't matter. And now it matters. And Brian referenced that Netflix documentary. And yes, Vandy and Pavia and Clark Lee, that program I thought was a star of that series in many ways. So they are nationally relevant and they've been smart about it. And they've somehow caught lightning here, and it's fun to watch. And just to dismiss them because of what you remember about Vandy is a huge mistake right now. I'm glad. I can't wait to look at your story. I think they deserve every bit of publicity and attention that it's getting right now.
Yeah, and God bless them. They're welcoming it, so that is a good thing. And you mentioned Clark Lee, who I did not, but I'm glad you did, because it took – not just realization, okay, look, my job's in jeopardy here. We just went 2-10. We lost 10 games in a row. I got to change something. But also some requisite humility to say, I'm going to bring in a guy who's been a head coach a lot longer than I have, and I'm going to install him in this position, assistant to the head coach and advisor to the offense, and he has a big hand in the offense, along with his offensive coordinator, Tim Beck, who came with him from New Mexico State, but and say, do your thing. You know, help us win. And Clark Lee, in that my back of my mind concern going into these interviews is going to be like, oh, the head coach is going to say, you know, this guy's getting too much attention. You know, he's overshadowing my work here, bringing this program back. No, man, he's fine. And you sit down and talk to him, and he glows about Jerry Kill.
That's
and
great.
Jerry Kill glows vice versa. So, you know, Clark Lee is also a guy that's pretty easy to root for. He's incredibly smart. Sometimes you wonder if he's almost too smart. But you go into his office, it's just like an absolute wall of books. And he's read everything that's ever been printed in the English language and every motivational book and every unlocked success book and all that sort of thing. But I think he needed for lack of a better term, a desert desperado blue collar guy to come in and say, yeah, well, those books are good, son. But here's some other things we need to do.
Just like the walls in back of you, Pat.
Yes. It's my minimum security holding room in my house here. Thank you. Anyway, no, it's just, you know, these stories are fun, and the more fresh teams we get to see. You brought up Cal. I everything about Cal is intriguing to me. The Calgarithm is hilarious. The you know, the way they've just kind of embraced this goofy role within the college football sphere. The more they win, the better. I will volunteer for the trip to Berkeley and the Bay Area for that one.
Yeah, Sangha Polakari, he's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah,
I was going to say we ought to pronounce the quarterback's name and closest to, that's the one that gets the trip out to Berkeley.
Yeah, yeah,
Mangu Polotele.
There we go.
There you go.
Good,
Gino. Well, you're Wojciechowski. You have to learn how to say those other names.
Great point. We might install you as our official pronunciation ombudsman of the podcast here.
The more consonants, the better for me.
Very good. Yeah, he's a little heavier on vowels. You're more consonant heavy. But,
yeah. I always volunteered to go to American Samoa or Hawaii to do the Polynesian football player story, but game day never quite went for it.
Can't believe it. What a missed opportunity by them.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We have everything you need to update your window treatments with Window Images blinds and shades. We carry vinyl, aluminum, and faux wood blinds, cellular shades, and more. Plus, get them trimmed to width in-store for free. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. All right. We do have, this is very exciting, we have new BK rant material. Brian Kelly went off again to our delight and to the dismay of one of the LSU beat reporters after they beat Florida. The first question he got after a 20-10 victory was, what's going on with the offense? And this is how Brian responded. Producer Kent, can you play the sound?
There's a ridiculous questions, and I'm getting tired of it. That football team just worked their tail off to get an SEC win, and you want to know what's wrong. You know what? You're spoiled. You're spoiled.
There we go. BK, never change. And I think the more they win, the crankier he gets. I love it. He gets him back, get him back on edge here. I actually agree with Brian that I didn't think that was a very good first question. And this is, we're going to get a little more sausage making here. there is a little bit of an art to how these group press conferences go. And the expectation is the first question is going to be a softball, especially if the coach doesn't open up with a statement. And so, you know, they win, they beat Florida, they're undefeated. And the first question is basically what's wrong with the offense. And that's what set him off. That would not be my plan. If I were asking the first question. Now, maybe you're sitting there, it's on deadline, it's late, I've got to get some sound, I've got to get something. And you don't have time for somebody else to ask a better first question. You got to fire your shot, but that didn't go over very well. I'm interested in your thoughts, guys, whether that was a good question or not. And then I want to hear your BK rant of the week.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that was, a TV person that asked that first question. So I'll throw that out there to not get grouped in. But I think this the combination of this question and my rant is against the Streisand effect. Because if BK had just brushed that aside, there's no way we're talking about, number one, that game against Florida, outside of maybe the defense getting five interceptions in that game. Like, it would have blown over. You know, if BK did not go on that rant, he's gotten more mileage out of that in particular than anything that has had to do with the game. And I think there is some concern. You know, you ask that LSU fan base, there's a concern that this is one of those Les Miles teams where, yes, they play good defense, but they do not have the offense to match. And I think there's some real concerns under the hood there that the offense is not performing up to what they are capable of, especially with a veteran quarterback like Garrett Nussmeier that is able to perform. But it's like a complete understanding for BK in general since he's gotten down there to the Baton Rouge. Anything he says or does outside of the norm, you know, it's going to get taken out of context. It's going to get blown up. Like, he definitely needs to understand the Streisand effect. Dabo is another guy this week that probably should understand that, given his press conference rant that we probably could have included in there. You go back a couple weeks with Mike Gundy. It's like coaches need to understand the new media environment in terms of what they say. If they are, it's not good for us, but if they are very even keeled, very, very calm, very, very, you know, I'm just going to brush that question aside. We're probably not talking about BK and his rant nowadays.
Are you anti-media, Brian? Are you encouraging blandness?
Well, I'm going to write my column no matter what. So I don't necessarily need the crazy quotes from BK, but I'll take them. That's for sure. I'll take them.
I've listened to rally killers at press conferences for decades, and it doesn't matter if it's a TV person or a print person. I mean, I don't think it was the finest moment by either one. The timing of the question probably could have been different. BK's reaction could have been different in his, give him credit. Kelly did apologize, for the outburst and reached out to the reporter, which was a class move. And so I think lessons learned by maybe everyone. My rant, is more UCLA, related.
Oh, good. And thank you. Somebody needs to get on UCLA.
Well, you know, I was just going through, I don't even know why, because I live a life of quiet desperation, but I stumbled across a podcast that Martin Jarmon, the athletic director at UCLA, did recently. And he was telling one of the hosts, they pay you for the hard times. Mm. And then he said, what should be done eventually, and Brian has mentioned this quote in the past, what should be done eventually should be done immediately. It was on a leadership podcast, which there's an irony there.
Yeah.
So now Jarmon is basically paying Deshaun Foster $5 million to go away after just 15 games. So to his credit, he did what needed to be done semi-immediately. My question is, why did he ever hire him in the first place? What indicators told Jarmon that this would be a successful hire? There were zero. So my issue isn't so much with Deshaun Foster. He was never going to succeed in that position. And Jarmon has admitted lately that UCLA did not put him in a position to succeed. So to me, the really question moving forward isn't how bad Deshaun Foster was. Anybody who watched that debut of his at the Big Ten Media Days in 2024 knew this was headed for a disastrous finish. But the question is, who do we want making the next decision. Our friend Bill Plaschke, who's a longtime LA Times columnist, has said Jarmon should not be anywhere near this decision. There's talk of putting together this committee of friends of UCLA and people who are connected with that athletic department and have ties to it. That doesn't sound like a real smart idea right now. So to me, your only job, Jarmon, is to put somebody in a position to succeed. And if you can't do it, then you're the next guy out. UCLA's problem is, yes, they say they have the resources. Fine. Then spend the money. Hire somebody who's worthy of that position. UCLA should not be an irrelevant football program in that town. It has great tradition. It has great uniforms, by the way. And it's not a program that should be irrelevant. Get it together or get out. That's my rant to UCLA right now.
That's good. Way to take them down. I agree completely. It's a complete mess. I'm shocked. I mean, Martin Jarmon should not be in charge of this hire. Absolutely not. But the other idea, though, that this is going to be, yes, we're going to pull in this big tent of people who care about UCLA to help make this decision, those usually don't go well.
No.
The AD that I've seen that's the best at hiring people was Tom Jurich at Louisville. There were other issues there, and those eventually cost him his job. But he was always a search committee and a selection committee of one. He's like, I was hired to do this. Trust me. Get out of my way. Now, Martin Jarmon hasn't earned that trust to do that, but that's why you need to have an AD who does. And I do sometimes wonder, as we expand the size of athletic departments and as search firms proliferate, what are ADs hired to do as they get paid $2 million? Because hiring the right people, to me, is the first and most important job. It still is in that position. There's plenty of other obligations, no doubt. But if you can't hire the right coaches, I'm not sure how good you are, how much you should be worth your salary.
Well, I think there's a lot of worry, too, back when they did hire Deshaun Foster, that they were going to go into the timing aspect of things really kind of messed up UCLA search. And that was to what Martin should have been doing, was kind of making feelers out there. Because if they had done their timing right in terms of, hey, Chip's going to leave, you could have back-channeled to a Jonathan Smith. You could have back-channeled to a number of other candidates saying, hey, this job might come open, or maybe you make sure that it comes open in terms of making a decision on Chip Kelly earlier rather than later, so you're not stuck in this position. And I think that's what really tripped them up, especially going into the Big Ten. They didn't want to have some sort of interim coaching decision that they said, all right, well, maybe guys will rally around being in the Big Ten, maybe rally around a guy that is an alum that the players want, which that hardly ever works out in terms of going with the guy that the players want. That's number one. You got to take that emotion out of a lot of these decisions, which UCLA certainly did not. And I am going to be very fascinated. You do hear this talk nowadays coming out of Westwood in terms of, all right, we're going to invest. They have a new chancellor that does seem to care about athletics, a guy who came from Miami who made the big push in terms of getting Mario Cristobal to get out of Oregon to come down to Miami. A lot of other factors at play in that search, but it does seem like UCLA, and we've heard this before, is taking things a little bit more seriously. I will see it, and when I see it, I will believe it. But until then, I remain skeptical about UCLA in general, because that has just not been an athletic department that has taken things seriously and done what they need to do. That was also the case across town at USC, that there was definitely some moments across town where USC, they took things a little bit maybe too seriously and to their detriment. But UCLA has all the tools to be successful there, especially in the Big Ten nowadays. You can win 8-9 games. You can pack the Rose Bowl a lot more than they have. But I will believe it when I see it. I remain skeptical that UCLA can get out of their own way, not just in this hire and not just moving forward with the football program, but I think in general, in the Big Ten.
Pack the Rose Bowl. You can count the number of fans they have with your fingers and toes right now. They're last in the Mountain West Conference standings. I mean, the Big Sky is mocking them on X. It's beyond embarrassing. They just lost to a New Mexico team that lost 30 players to the portal. That just shouldn't happen at UCLA. And if you go up the coast to Cal, at a place where they did invest and they hired someone like Ron Rivera and they made some smart decisions, as opposed to, and you mentioned it, Brian, the chancellor at UCLA, the former one, had no interest in the football program, in athletics in general. And this is what happens when you don't have, what's the word, alignment? That's, when you don't have alignment from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, well, that like, you could ask Casey Wasserman to money whip this situation, but he's also busy. He's trying to put on the LA Olympics, so he might get back to you in 2029 to fix the football program. I want to hit briefly on the other job that came open this week, Virginia Tech, and I don't imagine the candidate pools, there's much crossover between the two. We're talking different coasts, different identities, different everything there. But I would say, despite UCLA's membership in the Big Ten, Virginia Tech is a more desirable job, because UCLA's membership in the Big Ten comes with being basically the 16th, 17th, 18th best program in the Big Ten right now. Doesn't mean it's going to stay there, but boy, that's where it is right now. And Virginia Tech certainly should be, when they're operating well, upper half of the ACC, if not upper third, maybe even upper quartile. So to me, that's a place where you can do what coaches want to do, go to the playoff. And that's how you energize everything. That's how you get donations. That's how you get facilities built. That's how you get players. That's how you get on TV, which is important in the ACC because they pay you by ratings now. So that, to me, that job is interesting. The recruiting ground there in the Tidewater area and up the DMV is really good. Even in a portal era where people move around, a lot of times that's where you get them on the comeback. If they've gone to Alabama or Clemson or somewhere like that and didn't like it or didn't play, and you get that guy bouncing back and going to a Blacksburg. So I like that job. I love the fan passion there. It's a great place to go. You guys have been. Lane Stadium, when it rocks, is really fun. Doesn't mean they win. Their home winning percentage is actually incredibly disappointing. But the fans come and they support the team. So I like that job. I, you know, where they turn, everybody's going to want to get John Sumrall for next season from Tulane. Is he going to go to the SEC? Depends what jobs are open there. But if you're Virginia Tech and somehow that, you know, things don't open up or don't play his way within the SEC, maybe you can get a sniff there. There's plenty of other opportunities, candidates. Brian wrote 10 candidates for both jobs. You guys check that out on SI.com. But Whit Babcock, the AD there, is also somebody who they've already said he's not going to be running the search here. Whit is holding on to his job by his fingernails at this point because he hasn't been able to get football right.
Well, you know, look, I've said it before. I'll say it again. Jeff Monken. I understand all the other candidates are all worthy, but I'm a Jeff Monken guy, and I think he'd be a great fit there. And you're right. If you ask coaches, what is a better job? Just what's a better job, UCLA or Virginia Tech? I'd be very interested in hearing those answers, because Virginia Tech does have a passionate fan base. It does have a on-campus stadium. It does have a lot of tradition, and it's the only game in town. Yep. And so, and it's in a conference that I think is more doable than the Big Ten. So all the points that you made, Pat, are reasonable, logical, and they've got to get it right. But I'm a big fan of worker bee coaches, and to me, Monken is that kind of guy.
He is a worker bee, and he will sting.
I think it's important, you know, to that point. You know, you are having these conversations with agents and with coaches out there that, you know, like, if you succeed at a Virginia Tech, then you can get the better Big Ten job. You get the better SEC job. So I think that is, you know, at play in here. And I think it is going to be interesting. You know, Virginia Tech has, like UCLA, talked a big game about, hey, we're going to invest. We're not only going to, you know, build a new facilities. You know, we're going to invest in your coaching staff. We're going to invest in terms of what you're paying. And I think that's probably music to a lot of agents' ears with this coaching cycle, on top of being quite active in terms of the number of jobs that are going to come open compared to last year. But, you know, this is an inflection moment for Virginia Tech. And I think that they are at least smart in recognizing that. that they can be left behind. This is a hire that is critical, not just to the football program and interest in the football program there in Blacksburg, but also for that entire athletic department, for that entire university. And I am a little bit worried, though, at the same time, that you do hear all these committees that are being formed. And you know, we're going to get people in business involved in these searches. Like, that is a recipe for disaster. So both UCLA, Virginia Tech, they also got to be a little bit cognizant and worrisome a little bit in terms of that outside perception of there's too many cooks in the kitchen, and that can impact the coaching search. You know, you mentioned John Summerall, Pat. I don't think if the alignment is not there, that he would take a job like this. And so I think there's that's going to play into a lot of people's minds. Hey, who am I working for? How is this going to go? Am I going to get my way if I want something? And I think that's going to be a big question that's going to be asked surrounding these searches in Blacksburg and Westwood.
All right. We're 3 weeks into the season. It's time for us to make some sweeping pronouncements. That's what we do. We're sure of everything.
Never wrong.
Never wrong. Lifetime undefeated records of predictions and pronouncements. That's right. Guys, I want you to give me one thing 3 weeks in that you are sure about that you've seen this season. Brian Fisher, go ahead.
Do you guys know who has the – there are three teams tied for the longest active winning streak. One is obviously the defending reigning national champions, however you want to term it, Ohio State. Do you know the other two? Any guesses?
BYU?
Nope.
No.
You're covering one of their games this weekend, Pat.
The Illini?
Yes, that is one of them. And then the third one, which is to my point here in terms of what I know – Memphis, another one of those contenders in the American, which is, I think that is the one thing I'm sure of, is that the American is going to get that group of five bid between Memphis, Tulane, USF, obviously with their wins that they've had and already stacked despite the loss to Miami. Navy is out there. I mean, sneaky good. That was one of the teams that we included in our preseason brackets for a reason. Like the American, even North Texas nowadays, that they've portaled in a defense and to go with that offense that Eric Morse has there in Denton. The American is going to be a fun conference to follow, I think, throughout the year. And I'm pretty sure that they are going to get that group of five bid. Who that team is, I think, is definitely up for conversation. But I think the American almost has it on lock right now in terms of getting that group of five bid.
Good call.
Well, I have a couple, but I'll be very quick. So I'm absolutely sure that Jack Rinaldi, Tom Rinaldi's son, did a fantastic job at calling play-by-play a Notre Dame student radio station this past weekend at A&M game. He was fabulous. Nice. He'll have somebody's job soon enough, maybe Tom's. I'm absolutely sure that NBC bordered on cruelty showing Tyler Buchner repeatedly after the fumbled snap. I thought it was excessive and totally unnecessary what NBC did there. I was going to talk about the quarterbacks, Georgia Tech and Cal, but then I saw this Dabo Swinney presser yesterday. And I am now sure Dabo is not finishing his career at Clemson. And I'm not sure he's going to be there in 3 years. You just get the sense, fellas. I don't know how you guys feel about it. But the more I listen to him, and this isn't the first time that Dabo has spoken like this, maybe there's a part of him that's a bit defensive, and he can be like that. But maybe, as Brian Kelly famously said recently, you guys are spoiled. And I think we've reached a point where Clemson is spoiled. And maybe it's time, and it happens with every coach, it's time to rotate. It's time for Dabo Swinney maybe to go someplace else. Not because he's done anything wrong at Clemson. He's done an amazing job at Clemson. But there comes a point of diminishing returns. And I think maybe Dabo has reached that point at Clemson. Maybe it's time that he goes elsewhere. The way he talks sounds like he's ready to do that. If Clemson's tired of winning, they can just send me on my way. So I get the sense that he's kind of fed up with it all. And maybe it's just best for both parties. Shake hands. Dabo goes someplace else, does what he does, which is win. and Clemson does what it does, I guess, and finds someone else, and maybe they'll be happier. I don't see how they would, but maybe they would. So that press conference yesterday was an eye-opener to me.
Dabo's phone would ring quickly if he decided he didn't want to coach at Clemson, that's for sure. This was a little variation on the theme from last year with Tyler from Spartanburg. Tyler! When he was so mad at the radio caller for questioning him. This was a little different, I think, as you're alluding to, Gene, that where he was kind of almost like, hey, you know, dare me to leave and then watch me go win somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, certainly, yes, if I'm Clemson, I do not want that, especially at this point where you are and you are, you know, trying to position yourself, whether it's to join a richer conference or just to accrue all the money possible in the ACC. You're a two-time national champion coach. I would not want to lose. I would continue to encourage his very stubborn self to modernize and to view some things differently and to do some things differently, but I would definitely want to keep him on my team. My thing that I am sure about is Billy Napier ain't making it. That is probably not a terribly bold statement at this point, but at Florida, they're 1-2 and their offense just stinks. And you barely could muster anything against South Florida. And then you go to LSU and you can't do anything there. And your five-star quarterback throws 5 interceptions and you're just lost at this point. And given the rest of the schedule and given the snowballing negativity there, you know, Florida doesn't have to do anything publicly, but I'd be very surprised if the wheels aren't in motion on the secondary scene there in terms of figuring out where they're going to go next. I know Napier pulled it out of the fire last year. I don't see that happening this time around. That's the kind of thing maybe you pull off once, hard to pull off twice. All right, boys, give me one thing you're not sure about. Something 3 weeks in, you've seen, and you're still waiting for more results or evidence to roll in.
I'm not sure who's number one.
Mm.
I mean, are you guys?
No.
Is there a team where you're just like, yep, that's it. I've seen it. Good luck beating those guys. I haven't seen it. I've seen glimpses. I've seen moments. I've seen series. I've seen plays. But I haven't seen one team put it together for each of these early games. Now, again, it's very early. And we're just heading into, you know, beginning the muscle mass part of a lot of these schedules. You know, Miami, if I had to pick two teams, Miami and Oregon are the closest things to teams that I think are the best right now. Ohio State, certainly against Texas, was pretty impressive from a defensive side. Georgia last week against Tennessee, though defense was optional. I can go down the list. But I guess if I had to choose, LSU obviously has had some impressive wins. But you mentioned that offense. I'm not sure Nussmeier's 100% physically. So there are a lot of questions still. So I'm not sure who's number one right now. And maybe we don't get that answer anytime soon. Maybe we have to wait till Penn State plays Oregon till we get that answer. But right now, I'm flipping a coin as far as who's the best team in the country right now.
That's a good one. Yeah. I'm not sure what these quarterbacks are doing in the offseason. You know, I think we kind of came into this year in terms of a lot of hype around a lot of these quarterbacks that so far, at least early in the season, has not shown up. I mean, you look at Cade Klubnik, he looks like a completely different guy who was that confident guy, you know, in the ACC championship game, you know, late in that second half against Texas. He doesn't look like that guy anymore. You know, Gigi Alagwe, you know, who had all the hype in the world coming out in the offseason. There was a lot of questions about his injuries for sure, but in terms of the on-field play with him, we saw it in that game against LSU. I don't think anybody in Gainesville or otherwise would have predicted he threw 5 interceptions in one game. You know, if you'd asked them back in the summer, Garrett Nussmeier has not looked as kind of high end a quarterback as we think he can be, especially not in terms of numbers. I think he has done some stuff, you know, between the lines that have probably played better than his numbers would suggest, but not quite to the level of talent there in Baton Rouge. I mean, you can kind of go down the list. I mean, it has been the surprises, you know, I think out there. I mean, even a Sam Levitt that you thought, all right, he's got Jordan Tyson back, you know, in that game against Mississippi State, he looked lost, you know, and he looked a little bit better last week, but he just looked lost throwing the football. And I think that's the question mark I've had coming into this year. You know, it was all about the quarterbacks. We had a lot of these guys, their Heisman candidates, so far not living up to the hype. And that's even setting aside some of the injury concerns with the guys like Lenora Sellers and all that. Like, this is the one thing that I'm thinking back now and going to the offseason, I'm like, maybe I need to be a little bit more skeptical about these quarterbacks after months and months of building them up and thinking they're going to carry their teams. That has no longer been the case this season.
Yeah, you can add Drew Aller, I think, in there. He's been pedestrian. They haven't needed him to do anything, but I'm not sure he's played very well up to this point. And it's a good thing Sam Levitt has Jordan Tyson, because he's caught 24 of his 50 passes so far. He's not throwing to anyone else. That offense has been a big disappointment, I will say. The thing I'm not sure about, who's the best team in the SEC? Which goes part and parcel, really, with what Gene was saying about who's the best team in the country. I don't know. I saw from Georgia some of the usual fight and resolve and figure out a way to win a game that they have done incredibly well under Kirby Smart. But I saw a defense that did not look like a high-caliber Georgia defense. Gunnar Stockton played well. They got lucky with the field goal debacle from Tennessee, but I'm not sure on Georgia's defense. I'm not sure on LSU's offense. I'm not sure Auburn has made enough strides overall. I'm not sure Ole Miss really has the necessary talent. I am not sure whether Oklahoma has improved enough. They've improved a lot, but have they improved enough? I was impressed by Texas A&M on the road at South Bend. I was there for that, but I'm not 100% sold on them. Missouri's got an easy schedule. Vanderbilt, it's uncertain enough that Vanderbilt is in the conversation right now. So Didn't even mention Bama. Did not, and probably should. But, hey, you lose by 2 touchdowns to Florida State, you still got something to prove to me.
Yeah.
But so I look at that league, and it is, I think, wide open, which is really fun to be looking at the SEC here 3 weeks in and saying, I don't know. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out the rest of the way. All right, winners and steak dinners. Let's go ahead and try to figure out who the heck is going to win the games this week. We're going to pick them against the spread. I have lost my rundown here, so I can't even tell you this isn't even a cop-out. I can't tell you what the records of everybody are, and I can't find which games we're going to pick. It's a very high-level operation.
Brian's leading. I'm in second. You're way behind.
As usual? Okay. All right. Yes. Well,
I have the records up right now. All right. I am 11-5. Gene, you're 9-7. Pat, you're 6-10. I went 4-1 last week, so.
No, we're so happy for you.
Just run
that out there.
Like, they need to, can we mute Brian's mic here for this?
Forever.
Please. Thank you. Okay. Interesting week again. This is not a loaded week of games, but there are some non-traditional fascinating games out there. I alluded to two of them at the beginning of the show, and we're going to pick them. We're going to start with number 9, Illinois, getting 5.5 at number 19, Indiana. October 28th, 1950, 75 years ago, the one and only time they met as ranked opponents. And I have to say, as I was looking up information about that game, because I just got interested and went down the rabbit hole, newspapers.com, which is great fun, I did come across the same day in like the Sunday papers, there was an AP story on Kentucky playing Georgia Tech. It was written by an AP writer named Sterling Slappy. I hope Sterling Slappy went on to a fine career. I got a kick out of his byline. Anyway, Illini undefeated and playing really well under Bielema. Hoosiers undefeated, playing really well under Cignetti, but have not played anyone as of yet. I'll be at that game. Nighttime game, I'm going to be fascinated to see what the atmosphere is like, whether Indiana knows how to have a good football atmosphere. I know they tried last year. We'll see if they can keep it cranked up this season. I'm going to take the Hoosiers and give the 5.5. It's a pretty big number in, I think, two pretty even teams. But I really have liked this Indiana team all preseason. You know, I think we put them number 10 in our preseason top 25, higher than about anybody else. They've got a better quarterback in Fernando Mendoza, and their defense is very good. They've got some skill players. I'm rolling with the Hoosiers.
I'll defer to Mr. 11 and, you know, one.
No, you got to go out there so I can see where because this is one of those weird lines. It started out 5.5. It's actually moved to Indiana 6.5, I believe. So, like, everything is going towards the Hoosiers. But that is a lot in a game that you expect to be kind of close. I think Illinois, the style of play, they're going to be a little bit more methodical in this one. I think turnovers are going to be key in this one in terms of which of those quarterbacks is going to give the ball away. You know, so far, they really haven't. But I think if you're going to lean towards somebody making a boneheaded play, I almost want to go Fernando Mendoza. He's had a couple of passes that have been a little bit errant. That's a lot of points for a ranked team on the road. So give me Illinois plus 5.5. I might live to regret this one because I am a big supporter in terms of what Indiana has coming into this game. But I think Illinois, that is a team, as I mentioned earlier, longest active win streak. They know how to win these games. They've been tested a lot more than Indiana has this season. So give me the Illini.
To our listeners and viewers who might, and if you are, you've really got some issues, who might listen to my pick and think, I should do what he's saying. Don't. I have no clue on this game. It's like me pretending I know Portuguese. I don't know. I can't figure out this line for the life of me. It befuddles me. The whole game befuddles me as far as the spread is concerned. I'm going to take Illinois in the points only because I think Illinois is an experienced team. I don't think they'll get freaked out by being on the road. To Brian's point, they are more of a methodical team. I think they'll play it close. And they have been on the road. They were at Duke and won. So I like Illinois for reasons I can't really articulate, just because I like the 5.5 points. If somehow Illinois wins this for me, I'll be the most surprised guy in America.
I would agree with you, though. I would run away from this game in terms of betting it. Like, if I were,
absolutely.
I don't bet, yep. But this is one I would not touch. Here's another interesting one. I'm not sure I would touch this, and Brian Fisher will be covering this. Number 17, Texas Tech, getting 3.5 in the Muss at number 16, Utah. Great place to watch a game. 10 a.m. local kick. Oh, my God. I feel bad for the Ute fans because kegs and eggs games can be fun, but they also – you got to get going early for this. And for our viewers, I'm wearing a Fisher beer hat, not a Brian Fisher beer, but a Fisher beer hat. That's a Salt Lake Brewery. Excellent product out there. Red Raider fans, if you're rolling into SLC, hit the brewery. Enjoy it.
Maybe they want to sponsor us.
Maybe they do. You know what? We could use a sponsor. Fisher Beer. Look us up. I'm available. Brian, what do you got to pick in this game?
Do you know how many 10 a.m. kickoff games have you covered in your illustrious career?
I don't think I've ever covered a 10 a.m. Have you?
This is, I think, the fourth, maybe. Wow. Third or fourth. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of those big noon kickoffs that have come to the Mountain Time. Utah's had one before.
Colorado's had a couple.
USC comes to mind a couple years ago as well when they were rolling. So this is not my first rodeo, though. I do like them in terms of getting home and being able to actually watch games and get back to see a lot of those 3:30 kickoffs and in the primetime games. So give me Utah at home. The hook scares me a lot in this one with that 3.5. But I think Utah, with the offense they have, they're going to be able to keep things close. And look, their advantage is the one thing that can negate what Texas Tech has done in the portal. You know, they went heavy along their offensive and defensive lines. Well, guess what? Utah has maybe the best offensive line in the country. They certainly have two first-round tackles on both the left and right side. I think Devin Dampier and Jason Beck, the OC there, I think they know what to do when games are close. When they need a play called, I think they have a lot of things up their sleeve. So Give me the Utes at home. The hook scares me, but I think this is going to determine who is that Big 12 favorite this season, along with Iowa State.
Do you live in Salt Lake, Brian?
Not too far from the stadium, yeah.
Okay, so you're not, you know, you got to learn from 40, get the gas mileage a little more. Okay, it's a rookie mistake, but I'm with you. I'm taking Utah. The hook does not scare me. It's nothing against Texas Tech. This is just business. Utah wanted this game, by the way. They wanted the big noon game. They wanted the national exposure. I think they're going to embrace it, have a lot of fun with it. And I picked Utah to win that conference in our first podcast. I'm going to stick with them. I just think they're the better team, and I think they're worth the play on the 3.5.
Yeah, I'm with you boys there. I'm going with the Utes. Solid program that they had the blip last year. They're back, and they did what Vanderbilt did, what Oklahoma has done, is where you don't just go get a quarterback. You get the quarterback's offensive coordinator, too, and you bring in the package, and you ramp your offense that way, and it is working extremely well so far for them. I hope the fans get there early and enjoy their sunrise tailgating. I do remember a couple of years ago covering Colorado when, you know, the prime hysteria, and they're on big noon kickoff like three times in September. And God bless them. The Colorado fans, you know, they were excited by having Coach Prime, but they're not wired for the massive crush of sudden hoopla. And so you're sitting there on US 36 trying to get into Boulder from staying on the outskirts, and it is just hopelessly jammed up, and you're not going to get there. I need to get there to get video of Coach Prime on the field beforehand or whatever. It's like, sorry, I'll make kickoff, but I'm not going to make the pregame festivities, and neither did a lot of their fans. Now they might not be so festive. They're not very good this year.
No.
All right. Michigan, Nebraska, really interesting Big Ten game to me. Michigan is giving 2.5 in Lincoln. Cornhuskers have been building towards this kind of game. They are undefeated so far this year. It's year two with Dylan Raiola. They've put together a pretty good team around him. Gino, what do you think is going to happen?
Repeat after me. Year three is when Matt Rule's rebuilding projects usually take their biggest leap, right? Did it at Temple? Did it Baylor? Everything seems to be trending that way here at Nebraska. The game is at Nebraska. They get Michigan with an interim head coach and Biff Poggi, even though Poggi does have a track record as a head coach. You're facing a true freshman quarterback at Michigan who has to go on the road again. And yet I'm going to do a Lee Corso on you, and I'm going to take Michigan. I'm not yet a believer in Nebraska. I saw what Underwood did on the road at a tough place at OU, and I thought he did relatively well. And I don't expect him to be worse at Nebraska after that experience at OU. I think Michigan is going to take a few more of the training wheels off of that offense for him. And I think this is the kind of game that Michigan is actually built for. I'll lay the 2.5.
Well, I think, you know, I almost want to pick against Michigan because Biff's not coaching in the cutoffs anymore. Like, if
he wants to
Lincoln in the cutoffs, you know,
unfortunate. If you've seen Biff with the sleeveless shirts and the big meaty arms, it's a beautiful sight.
I mean,
former Pitt lineman.
It's not a primetime game. So, you know, you can roll out there in the sun, you know, show the gun show, if you will, Biff. So I think I'm going to lean with the home team getting points. I mean, this is, you know, the peak of what Nebraska can be on the field this year when Dylan Raiola is operating well in that offense, when those black shirts come to play on defense. I think they can win this game. And I think this is going to be a big test for whether not only is Nebraska for real in the Big Ten as a potential fringe, maybe dark horse, if you want to call them that, college football playoff contender, because the schedule does set up well. If they can get past this game, you can see the runway going there in terms of building momentum. This is a big game for Matt Rule. I think they know that. I am a little bit concerned after watching them in that Cincinnati game where they almost kind of gave it away there at Arrowhead. That is it. you know, starkly emblazoned in my mind. But I think Nebraska in this spot, that they've had this one circled for a while. I think they get the edge on the interim coaching staff there in Michigan.
I'm rolling with Biff. For this reason, I think that, and this doesn't really have much to do with Biff, but last week we saw Michigan do with Bryce Underwood, what they really didn't do against Oklahoma, which is cut him loose to run and be the exquisite athlete he is. He had over 100 yards rushing on, I think, only 9 carries. Yeah, it was Central Michigan, but that's the dynamic of his game that I think makes him all the more dangerous, and he's plenty confident. You get him going with some runs and watch the confidence build there and see that offense start moving better. And I think Michigan can win and cover in Lincoln. To Brian's point, Nebraska has tended to turn into a bundle of nerves in close games, as they did against Cincinnati and nearly blew that. So I don't trust them in a close game here. All right, game that looked like it was going to be maybe one of the highlights of the week till Florida laid a couple of eggs. But the Gators are getting 7.5 in South Florida against the Canes. Brian, who are you picking?
A little worried about the back door in this game, but giving Miami, even with that hook in particular. I mean, I think if they are going to run up any type of score, if they're going to have an opportunity to throw it deep and get another big play on the Gators, trust me, Mario Cristobal is going to do this in this one, especially with Florida State on deck. They are operating at peak efficiency right there in Miami. I think this is a big game for Carson Beck. Give me Miami in the 7.5.
I'm with you on Miami. I'm not concerned about the hook. I think Pat put it perfectly earlier. Florida's right at the edge. If there's any sort of real problem in this game, I could see Florida just folding. I mean, I hate to use that word, but I think they're right there. I mean, can they go 1 week without some sort of controversy? They just had an assistant coach suspended for 3 games for the pregame scuffle against LSU. I mean, they can't seem to get out of their own way. And if any of you can explain to me or point out a position of strength that Florida has over Miami right now, I mean, I think Miami has a better quarterback. I think they have the better O and D lines. I think they have the momentum. It's at Miami. I just can't think of a compelling reason to take Florida in this game, even with the 7.5 points.
Yep, I'm with you guys. Gene, so you said earlier that, I mean, if anybody I think has played the best so far this season, it might be Miami. I've been really impressed by what they've put on the field, and I think they are going to continue that, and they're going to roll. They'll win. I ain't worried about the hook. They're taking that game and coming out authoritatively. All right, lock of the week. Who do you guys have?
Well, I think, you know, you guys enjoyed me going off the board quite a bit last week. So I'm going to go way off the board. We're going to go to the factory, the gray field.
Going further off the board than Georgia Southern?
Ypsilanti, Pat. Oh, my God. Ypsilanti.
Oh, my God.
Louisiana, don't call them ULL, getting 2.5 points at Eastern Michigan, or giving 2.5. Give me the Cajuns, the raging Cajuns, to cover that number. Eastern Michigan, maybe one of the worst teams, not only in the MAC, but in FBS, based on what they've shown so far this year. Give me the Cajuns on the gray field of Ypsilanti.
Another deep cut from Brian Fisher.
Go ahead, Pat.
All right, I'm taking Memphis here. Brian alluded to the Tigers. They're off to a really good start. They are getting 7.5 at home against Arkansas. And the Arkansas scheduling dynamic, I think, is an interesting one here, where they played a little brother, but still a game they had to be ready for and pay attention to in Arkansas, Arkansas State. They went on the road and played an old SEC West rival, Mississippi. Next week, Notre Dame comes to Fayetteville for the first time. And then you've got this game plunked in here on the road against a team that absolutely wants to beat you and a fan base that wants to beat you, because there's a lot of neighborhood rivalry between Arkansas and Memphis fans. There's a lot of Arkansas fans live in Memphis and in that area. This Memphis team's a little better running the ball than previous iterations, so I can see them controlling the ball, eating up some clock, keeping Talen Green off the field, and if they don't win outright, they can certainly cover the 7.5. I love that hook there.
I really like that pick. Can I have that too?
If you want it, go ahead. Come up with your own reason.
Got to do my own. Lock of the week, Brian Kelly will be on his best behavior after they beat Southeastern in the postgame presser. But if I had to pick a game, I'm going to go with the University of Pat 40. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give the 10.5 points against South Carolina. I like this Mizzou team. I know they don't leave the state until like what, next February or something. I mean, their schedule's
ridiculous. An absurd schedule.
This will be South Carolina's first road game. We really don't know the condition of Lenore Sellers. He's expected to play. He's listed as questionable. I expect him to play, but you know, how effective will he be? And I think Mizzou has a lot going for it. I think I like that offense. I like that atmosphere. I think that's a game where a Mizzou could really sort of impose its will. And I think South Carolina's in a kind of a quirky, dangerous spot right now. So I'll give the 10.5 and root for the 40s.
Yeah, I have no idea what to think about that game. But Missouri does have the schedule set up if they are good enough to roll pretty deep into this season. So we will see. All right, last thing. This show's gone on pretty long, but we have to get to this on the way out. A little people's court. I'm going to need a ruling from Justices Wojciechowski and Fisher. Incident in Canada. Oh, those Canadians. They can find some ways to get themselves in trouble, usually alcohol-related, and yes, this one is as well. Here's the headline. Man arrested for drunk driving pink toy Barbie Jeep on busy Canadian street. That right there. Okay, you've got my attention. Good job, headline writer. Very good. The subhead. The accused said he was getting ready to go out for a Slurpee and decided to borrow his roommate's child's tiny car to get around. And so he took the little, you know, the little tiny pink Barbie Jeep, somehow fit himself into it. I don't know how that happened, and hit the road for it. There's actually pictures of him being pulled over, squad car absolutely dwarfing the little Barbie Jeep, and him being arrested. The best part of this, well, maybe not the best part of it, maybe one of the more concerning parts. He was driving down 15th Avenue near Nicholson Street morning Friday, September 5th, wearing aviator sunglasses when the authorities apprehended him. This is morning rush hour, and he's arrested for driving drunk. So I'm a little concerned about our man's lifestyle at this
point. All he was wearing were the aviators?
He had some jorts on. Okay. Look, very, very gator.
Where do you find this stuff, man?
You got to look around. You got to be ready. You got to find things. Now, Justice Wojciechowski, are you going to throw the book at our Barbie driver? Are you going to give him leniency on account of creativity for finding a way to drive?
Wow. You know what? I'm going to give him a reprimand and tell him never drive another Barbie Jeep again. you have to admire. You have to admire the gumption on this one. It's such a bizarre story. I don't even know what you'd do if you were the judge listening to that case. How do you keep a straight face during it all? I'm more amazed that you found this story. I don't know how you find these things, but anyway, yeah, I'd let him walk, literally let him walk. You're never driving again, at least not some daughter's Barbie Jeep.
Yeah, do you think your point taken on licenses, you know, if you're driving the Barbie car, like how does that work? My biggest concern, like you mentioned, Pat, I mean, this was a morning rush hour type of thing. So if we're still getting the hitting the limit there, that to me is the red flag. So I'm throwing the book at him. Also, you know, if you ever, hey, my kids have one of these type of cars, it's not pink, it's white, but like, you know, it's a brisk walk. You know, if they're really gunning it to follow those cars, it's a brisk walk. So it's like you probably could have taken some alternate means of transportation. I think he probably still would have gotten pulled over if he was on a scooter, based on that early description for you, Pat. So I'm throwing the book at him. This was a bad decision.
Yeah, that you can't even really, you can't have a high speed chase. That's for sure in this thing. You can't even have the low speed OJ Ford Bronco chase. So this is like a no speed chase. Not hard to apprehend our guy here. And the fact he was going out for a Slurpee, also kind of fascinating. It's 8 a.m. or whatever, and you've had a few pops, and you decide, gee, a Slurpee is what I need.
You need your big gulp.
Fascinating. You know what? Canada, never change. Yeah, I think I probably take his license forever, and then I also impound the Barbie Jeep. And if his roommate and the roommate's child is mad about it, well, then you fine him for the money to go buy a new one. But that has to also be kept away from him. So Barbie Jeep justice in Canada. We'll take care of it for you, Canadians. All right, that's our show. It's gone on long enough. We probably crashed the Valdez onto the rocks a couple times, but thank you for listening. We'll try to do better next week. We'll talk to you later.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.